This is Kendall Stratton, your local neighborhood-friendly tree ninja, reminding you to get those fruit trees taken care of. It is the time. You're listening to KORC LPFM, Corvallis, Oregon, streaming worldwide at korcfm.com.
The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
Welcome, everybody, to KORC's News, Music, and Civics. This week, we have local meetings read by Trevor Sayre, news and sports from Lava Lamp Larry, Democracy Now!, and Dan Krall's interview with Roger Dale Martin. Thank you for joining us. Let's get started.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Trevor Sayre with your Corvallis City meetings for the week of April 8th, 2024. On Monday, April 8th, the Housing Operational Committee will meet virtually at 12:30 p.m. The Housing Operational Committee meets as needed to assist staff with preparing draft documents for policy change that will eventually be presented to the Council for review. Please see CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join. On Tuesday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m., the Historic Resources Commission meeting will be conducted in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be conducted virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to attend the meeting online. On Thursday, April 11th at 9 a.m., the Civic Beautification and Urban Forestry Department Advisory Committee meeting will be held at the Corvallis Parks and Recreation Administration Building, 1310 Southwest Avery Park Drive. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Sayre.
Hi, this is Lava Lamp Larry with a recap of the 2024 Oregon legislative session. The Oregon legislative short session started February 5th and wrapped up early on March 7th. Legislative bills that favor the environment. SB 1530 was $15 million in funding for the Healthy Homes Repair Fund and $4 million for the Residential Heat Pump Fund. These funds are a critical piece to reduce air pollution and carbon emissions created by gas-fired home appliances. HB 4083, the COAL Divestment Act, will phase out state pension fund investments in publicly traded coal assets and direct the Oregon Treasury to accelerate efforts to divest all retirement funds from coal. SB 1596, the right to repair, saves money and reduces waste by allowing people to repair their electronic devices, laptops, phones, tablets. They can do that on their own or with a service provider rather than just with the original manufacturer. HB 4132 protects Oregon's marine reserves by funding and planning for the continued conservation of valuable and unique natural places. HB 4080 creates a roadmap for stakeholder engagement and fair labor standards in the event that floating offshore wind energy is developed off the south coast near Coos Bay and Brookings. HB 4024 establishes first-ever campaign finance limits for Oregon. Starting in 2027, individuals and corporations will only be able to give up to $3,300 to a candidate per election cycle. Political parties and membership groups will have slightly higher limits. Oregon's current laws place no caps or restrictions on campaign contributions. HB 4059 will extend limitations on the planting of genetically engineered canola in the Willamette Valley, which can have a difficult-to-reverse impact to other crops in the ecosystem. SB 1576 helps preserve public access to beaches and trails by limiting the legal liability of landowners who open up their land to the public. The bill clears up some legal ambiguities and defines the situations where the law applies. A temporary bill, this issue will need to be revisited by the 2025 legislature. SB 1537 was Governor Kotek's housing development bill, which passed after amendments. One of the more controversial pieces of that bill was a tool to allow cities to expand their urban growth boundaries, but that was pared back. The bill passed. Other bills that did not pass the session included SB 1559, which would strengthen climate change goals. It would have also included electric vehicle rebates for low-income and middle-income households. Other bills that did not pass include HB 4133, which would have shifted the costs of wildfire suppression to the public while reducing Wall Street-owned investment companies from paying further. HB 4090 was another bill that did not pass, which helps protect state environmental review of energy projects. This bill would have removed Oregon from reviewing any energy products or transmission lines proposed on federal lands. Because federal and state review processes are currently being reformed and streamlined, this bill was difficultly timed. That's a review of environmental bills from the 2024 Oregon legislative session. For KORC News, I'm Lava Lamp Larry.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. KORC brings you a weekly segment of Democracy Now! This segment is from Thursday, April 4th. For more information on international and national news, visit democracynow.org.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I feel like my children will die in front of my eyes. What can I say? I don't know what I am to do. I can feel them dying before my eyes. This is my daughter. It's been 5 days she is without food or drink.
USAID officials have privately warned President Biden famine in Gaza is unprecedented in modern history. As the official death toll in Gaza tops 33,000, we speak to a prominent Israeli professor about how Israel put Gaza on the road to famine. Plus, we talk to a Palestinian-American doctor who volunteered in Gaza about why he walked out of a White House meeting with President Biden.
You cannot engage and try to get us to come out and show up in the primaries or in November, at the same time approving billions of dollars of 2,000-pound bombs that I personally saw devastate Khan Yunis and Deir el-Balah and all the areas in Gaza. That sort of cognitive dissonance is not something that it just our community glosses over.
Then from prison to the presidency, we go to Senegal, where a pair of opposition leaders went from prison to ruling Senegal in 3 weeks.
Le Sénégal sous mon magistère.
Under my leadership, Senegal will be a country of hope, a country at peace, with an independent justice system and a strengthened democracy.
We get an update from Dakar. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The founder of World Central Kitchen, Chef Jose Andres, has accused Israel of systematically targeting the 7 aid workers who were killed Monday in a series of drone strikes in Gaza. Chef Andres spoke to Reuters Wednesday.
The end is what we know, what everybody knows, that 17 members between the specialty security people we have, three British individuals and three international crew plus one Palestinian, that they were targeted systematically, car by car.
The killing of the aid workers has sparked global outrage. World Central Kitchen and other aid groups have halted aid deliveries at a time when northern Gaza is facing famine. The United Nations has temporarily halted all operations at night in Gaza for at least 48 hours to reassess security protocols. According to the United Nations, 196 aid workers have been killed in Gaza since October 7th. President Biden is scheduled to speak with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today as the official death toll in Gaza tops 33,000. Biden has said he was outraged by the attack on the aid workers, but the U.S. is continuing to arm Israel. Palestinians say the attack on the aid workers is part of a broader campaign to starve the people of Gaza.
They bombed the World Central Kitchen to starve the Palestinian people, so that the Palestinian people do not survive in their land and homeland. We call on all Arab peoples to stand with us and witness what has happened to the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people are humiliated. Their dignity was stripped away. We no longer have homes or anything. The Palestinian people have been living in humiliation from the 1948 war until now.
The Israeli publication 972 has exposed how the Israeli military has used an artificial intelligence program known as Lavender to develop a kill list in Gaza that includes as many as 37,000 Palestinians who were targeted for assassination with little human oversight. A second AI system known as Where's Daddy, tracked Palestinian men on the kill list. It was purposely designed to help Israel target individuals when they were at home at night with their families. The World Health Organization's warning many patients could soon die if they're not evacuated from Al-Shifa Hospital, which has been left in ruins after a two-week Israeli military siege. Medical crews have found hundreds of bodies scattered across the medical complex. Palestinians are still searching the grounds for loved ones.
I am now searching for six people we lost in the war. My sister, all of her children, and my niece Alma. May Allah have mercy on her. I have found no trace of them. They were buried here, and we don't know what happened to their bodies or where they went. We don't know anything. Here we find a number of uncovered bodies, and they are unidentified. We don't know what to do with them.
Israeli war cabinet member Benny Gantz has called for early elections to be held in September. Gantz is the top political rival to the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who continues to face daily protests in Israel. In Britain, pressure is growing on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to suspend arms sales to Israel. Three former British Supreme Court justices have joined hundreds of lawyers, legal academics, and retired judges to warn that continued arms sales could make Britain complicit in genocide. This is David Lammy, foreign policy chief of the opposition Labour Party.
All of the British public can see the scenes coming out of Gaza, children lying in rubble, deep concerns being made about international human rights law. And for all of those reasons, that advice should be published. And if it is the case that international law has been contravened, then it's absolutely right that offensive arms are suspended to Israel.
Meanwhile, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez says his country will recognize Palestinian statehood by July. This comes as Palestine's UN representatives have renewed a push for full membership at the international body. Here in New York, tallies from Tuesday's primary election show around 12% of Democratic voters in New York State cast a blank ballot instead of voting for President Biden. In Ukraine, Russian drones hit multiple apartment buildings in Kharkiv early this morning, killing at least four people, including rescue workers. This is a 77-year-old survivor of the attack.
It is dark there, impossible to see. All the windows are broken, everything blown out, nothing is left. It's good that we're alive, thank God.
NATO members met Wednesday to discuss long-term military funding for Ukraine. NATO's weighing a possible $100 billion five-year fund in what's seen as a Trump-proof way of ensuring continued support to Kyiv, even if he's elected president. In related news, Ukraine is lowering its conscription age from 27 to 25 as the war grinds on for a third year following Russia's invasion. In Russia, a court sentenced in absentia Russian-Canadian artist and Pussy Riot activist Pyotr Vervizov to 8 years in prison for social media posts condemning the invasion of Ukraine. Vervizov announced last year he joined the Ukrainian army fighting against Russian forces, though his current whereabouts are uncertain. Turkey's top election authority says it's reinstating the victory of Abdullah Zeydan of the pro-Kurdish People's Equality and Democracy Party after his removal led to protests and a crackdown by police. Zeydan won over 55% of the vote in the eastern city of Van in Sunday's elections, but the city's election board denied him victory, saying he was disqualified due to a previous conviction. The local election board had said the mayorship should instead go to the candidate of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's AK Party, who won just 27% of the vote. Abdullah Zeydan's reinstatement is the latest blow to President Erdogan after the opposition Republican People's Party won mayoral races in Turkey's five largest cities Sunday. In Kenya, public hospital doctors are in their third week of a nationwide strike over pay issues. The doctors' union has taken their protest to the streets as it demands the Kenyan government pay them for past wages they're still owed and hire over 3,000 unemployed medical interns.
Medical services are not free. You cannot tell us that medicine is a calling. Apart from being a calling, medicine is a career. It is a career.
We are human beings.
We need to be paid. We are human beings.
The ongoing strike has led to major disruptions in healthcare across Kenya, but the government says they don't have the funds to fulfill strikers' demands as it navigates a looming debt crisis. Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has declared a national disaster over the protracted drought plaguing the region, warning some 2.7 million people will face hunger this year. Zambia and Malawi have also declared states of disaster related to the drought, which has triggered a massive grain shortage. In the Philippines, hundreds of schools were forced to close this week due to extreme heat and an elevated risk of heat stroke. The heat index hit over 111 degrees Fahrenheit in some areas. Scientists have confirmed this March was the hottest ever recorded. It was also the 10th consecutive month to set a global heat record. New York Judge Juan Merchan has denied Donald Trump's latest attempt to use a presidential immunity defense, this time in his criminal hush money case. Merchan also rejected Trump's bid to delay the trial's April 15th start. The last two survivors of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre appeared at Oklahoma Supreme Court this week in a bid to revive their reparations lawsuit. An estimated 300 black people were killed when a white mob burned down what was known as Black Wall Street, the thriving African-American neighborhood of Greenwood, Oklahoma. Viola Fletcher and Lessie Benningfield Randall are now both 109 years old. In a statement, the two women said, quote, "We're grateful that our now weary bodies have held on long enough to witness an America and an Oklahoma that provides race massacre survivors with the opportunity to access the legal system. The Oklahoma Supreme Court has the power to open the doors of justice," they said. And 56 years ago today, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. His family members are holding their annual wreath-laying ceremony in Atlanta. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. President Biden is scheduled to speak with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today for the first time since Israeli forces sparked international outrage by killing seven aid workers from World Central Kitchen. The organization's founder, Chef Jose Andres, has accused Israel of systematically targeting the aid workers who went to Gaza with a shipload of aid to feed starving Palestinians. While Biden has said he was outraged by the killings, the White House has indicated it plans to keep arming Israel, even as the death toll in Gaza tops 33,000. The Biden administration is preparing to approve a new $18 billion arms deal for Israel that includes as many as 50 American-made F-15 fighter jets. The U.S. also recently approved sending 1,800 2,000-pound bombs, which can be used to level entire city blocks, as well as 500 more 500-pound bombs.
Earlier this week, the White House was forced to cancel its planned Ramadan dinner after many Muslim American leaders refused to go to protest Biden's Gaza policy. Instead of a dinner, Biden held a scaled-back meeting Tuesday with Muslim American community figures, but that, too, was met with protests. The Palestinian-American emergency room physician, Thayer Ahmed, walked out of the White House meeting. Before leaving, he gave President Biden a letter from an 8-year-old orphaned Palestinian girl named Hadil that read, "I beg you, President Biden, stop them from entering Rafah."
I got your letter today, and I miss you all so much here. I can't wait to see you all, and I'm counting the days here. I still believe that there's gold at the end of the world, and I'll come home to Illinois on the day.
Day After Tomorrow by Phoebe Bridgers, an artist for Ceasefire. Ambela Mama, Mother's Prayer by Mukumba. That does it for our show. Saturday night, I'll be speaking in Berkeley at KPFA's 75th anniversary celebration. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
That was Democracy Now! From Thursday, April 4th, 2024. For more information, visit democracynow.org. You're listening to KORC.
You're listening to KORC. I'm Nick Martin. Oregon's U.S. Senators Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden today announced they secured investments for essential community-initiated projects across Oregon in both of the fiscal year 2024 government funding packages that recently cleared Congress and were signed into law by President Biden. With the support of members of Oregon's congressional delegation in the U.S. House of Representatives, that includes Representatives Earl Blumenauer, Suzanne Bonamici, Val Hoyle, Andrea Salinas, and Lori Chavez de Remer, the senators helped secure a total of 139 community-initiated projects in Oregon in the final fiscal year 24 spending bill. And some of those dollars are coming to Benton County. $1.5 million went to Dev Northwest to build 54 Community Land Trust affordable homes in Corvallis. The homes will be 2 to 3 bedrooms and sold to low to moderate income families. The homes will be permanently affordable for subsequent Oregon homebuyers, helping to address the urgent affordable housing crisis in Benton County. Another $1.1 million went to Benton County to design and construct critical upgrades to the rural Alpine and Alsea sewer districts, which will lead to sewer system improvements for connected users in the county. Another $1 million went to Benton County to build the Monroe Rural Health Center, which will provide greater access to quality health care for rural community members. The new health center will provide acute primary care, behavioral health, chronic disease management, and health screenings to vulnerable residents by addressing financial, geographic, language, and cultural barriers to care. And lastly, $963,000 went to Benton County to enhance the regional public safety radio infrastructure. The funds will support their installation of 3 antennas and purchase of new radios to eliminate dead zones in communication between agencies. This project will improve public safety and emergency response in Benton County by enhancing interoperability and situational awareness between law enforcement and fire EMS, according to a press release on Jeff Merkley's website. These last two projects were secured with support from Representative Val Hoyle, who represents Oregon's 4th Congressional District, which includes Benton County. This is Nick Martin with KORC.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics, a program heard Sundays from 1 to 2 p.m. and Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. We are looking for people to help us deliver the news each week. If you are interested, if you're a storyteller, an interviewer, a budding journalist, KORCFM.com is our website. You can email us at info@KORCFM.com. This next segment features an interview that I did with a musician by the name of Roger Dale Martin from a Christian death metal band called Vengeance Rising. I enjoyed them very much as a kid, partially because I wasn't allowed to listen to non-Christian metal. And I would say the music still holds up. We're going to open the segment with a song of theirs called Into the Abyss. I hope you're a fan of metal, because this next song is intense. It was actually released in 1990. And like I say in the interview, I still believe the music holds up to this day, even if its message doesn't still resonate with me. I was happy to get an interview with Roger Dale Martin of Vengeance Rising, which is coming up after this track, Into the Abyss.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to KORC. That was a track called Into the Abyss. That is by a band called Vengeance Rising, which you may not believe is actually a Christian band, or was a Christian band. And right now I am speaking with the bass player from Vengeance Rising, Roger Dale Martin. Thank you for joining us this and taking time out of your schedule.
Well, you're just welcome as you can be. Thank you for inviting me, Dan.
Yeah, I must say, I grew up in a house where I was not allowed to listen to a lot of non-Christian music for a time. That wasn't always true, but definitely when it came to heavy metal and hard rock, the only stuff I was allowed was bands like Petra, Michael W. Smith on more of a soft side, DC Talk, but I seeked out the best, and that is music that I would say still holds up to this day. Vengeance Rising and the band Mortification. My brother was into the band Tourniquet. We knew some kids at church who were into bands like Deliverance, Blood Good, Whiteheart. I never liked Whiteheart. I never understood what the big draw was. They were supposed to be super brutal, according to what somebody had told me, and nothing of the sort. But Vengeance Rising, as you just heard, I think you guys still hold up. Let me just say that.
Well, thank you. To me, the first album, Human Sacrifice, was definitely meant to be. It has stood the test of time, like you said. It's still very, very popular. There's actually a Facebook page that stays active like 24/7 with old Vengeance Rising stuff, and people still love all that material. And obviously it sounds like you do too, Dan.
Now, are you talking about just the song Human Sacrifice, or that album, that 1988 album?
The whole album. Most people love it, and they know all the lyrics, believe it or not, and they know pretty much every lick from beginning to end on that album. It was breaking for the Christian metal community at the time, Dan. Nobody was doing hard music. Nobody was doing thrash at all. It was basically just power metal, you know, just your basic mainstream metal. And at the time, it was current. Now in Los Angeles, speed metal, or it's we called it speed metal back in the day, and it was changed to thrash. But what happened in Los Angeles County was all metal, and right next door to Los Angeles County was Orange County. Now Orange County was completely punk. Everything about Orange County, all the music, was punk rock. And so sooner or later, the metal from LA is just going to mix with the punk of Orange County, and all of a sudden you got speed metal or you got thrash, and that's where it actually came from. And when I was putting the band together, me and Doug Thiem, we actually went to Orange County, and we were considering a punk drummer at the time, but it didn't work out. But a lot of our roots are in that, and of course we have a blues element that was a little different. We weren't just popular in the Christian metal scene. We were popular in the whole metal scene in Los Angeles, and we played for a lot of secular bands, Death Angel. Let's see, we played a lot of these guys, and so they liked us, not necessarily because we were a Christian band. They liked us because we were a good band.
I do know that before we talk about anything else, I do want people to hear Human Sacrifice, because as you said, it was released in 1988, certainly uncharacteristic of a lot of music at the time. And just to give people an idea, let's listen to the title track, Human Sacrifice, from that album. What do you say?
Oh, heck yeah, let's do it.
It's Human Sacrifice by Vengeance Rising, released in 1988. Human Sacrifice by Vengeance Rising from their album of the same name, released in 1988. This is Dan Krall with KORC, and I have got Roger Dale Martin, the bass player of Vengeance Rising, on the phone. Thank you for joining us. And what do you remember about most about that recording that album?
The recording of the album was actually... it was more fun than, and when you listen to it, you think, man, these guys were all angry, and man, it was just difficult. It was a lot of fun for us. We went into the studio without having to figure anything out. Our songs, we knew our songs so good. They everything went real quick. And we didn't take ourselves too seriously, which is a very good thing. These songs flowed. How we actually recorded was we got the drum tracks down first. We got Glenn Man Caruso. It was basically me and Glenn. The whole band played, and we got Glenn down. And then once Glenn was done on the drums, I came in on the bass, and we just added and added more and more stuff like that. And it went really quick. I was happy that... you know, sometimes, once again, sometimes a band will go into the studio and they're not quite sure what they're going to do with their songs, and they'll have a producer telling them, hey, could you change this or that? We didn't have to change anything because we knew exactly what we were going to play. once again, we had a lot more sense of humor going on than what people perceived, and it was just a great time. In the studio, we worked with an engineer, basically. We didn't have a producer right off the bat. well, we kind of did, but we didn't pay much attention to him. And but I remember the guy who was engineering. He was producing. He was on a diet at the time, and but still, from time to time, he would get to have burger and fries. And then when he had burger and fries, he was in a really good mood. And he said, one time he told us, man, these fries are worth way more than what I paid for them. And it was hilarious. The Making of Human Sacrifice is fantastic. Now, a lot of people don't know, but at the very end of the album, there's some just some horrible... screams. So that sounds like it come from a basic horror movie. The very last song is called Beheaded, and the vocalist screams and screams and screams. That scream did not come from the recording of Human Sacrifice. The scream actually came from a demo tape that we did. It was the very first demo tape. And when Roger Martinez, when he recorded that, we were just going, man, this is great. It was, and then he tried to reproduce that again in the studio when we were doing Human Sacrifice, and it just did not come off like the original. So we took the screams from the demo tape, and we put it on the album, and it was the very last notes, or the very last thing you hear from the Human Sacrifice album.
So screams by Roger Martinez, the lead singer of Vengeance Rising. Let's listen into those screams. Haunting screams, indeed. Roger Martinez of Vengeance Rising. You say that was from the original demo tape, huh?
A lot of people ask me about Roger Martinez. I basically, Dan, I never listened to... Now it's reported, I don't know. At one time I was looking to talk to him, it was reported that he said, I am not a Christian anymore, and then he had some other views and things like that. For me personally, I've never listened to any of his stuff. And so many people have called me and said, have you heard of what Roger said? Or have you listened to this tape? Or have you watched this and watched that? I said, no, I never have. I don't care to.
I came across a blog of his in the early 2000s. It was called Warpath of the Fatherless. And, I mean, even as I was pretty much at the time also angry at my experience with Christianity. But even regarding that, I read his writing and thought, oh, boy, poor dude. I mean, Roger just seemed, on top of being really angry, just kind of childish. I read a lot of the comments, and it seemed to be from fans saying, hey, man, what's going on? And I tried reaching out to him myself because I just, if nothing else, it'd be cool to touch base with the lead singer of one of my favorite bands from childhood, but never was able to reach him. So, I mean, I guess it is If you look on Wikipedia, there's a little bit of a story about the falling out of Vengeance Rising.
From my point of view, here's what happened. On the second tour, I was done. Believe me, after the second tour, me personally, I thought, gosh, my time in Vengeance Rising is done. And so after the show in Austin, I grabbed a plane and I flew back to L.A. and everybody else was on the tour bus. And on the way back, I thought to myself, okay, when all the guys come back, oh, I'm gonna tell them, look, you guys are going to have to find another bass player. I'm done with the group. And it just turned out that when all the guys returned, everybody returned except Martinez returned, but he took off and he flew to Australia, so he wasn't there. And so I got with the other guys. I said, look, I'm out of here. And they said, well, Roger, we were thinking the same thing. We want to disband the group. And I said, okay, well, we owed a little bit of T-shirt money, some merchandising, and we all decided, okay, well, here's on the road, we sold X amount, but what we were going to do was we were going to set up a big gig in L.A., and we were going to go to sell all our merchandise. It's no big deal, and pay it off, and then we're good to go. But when Martinez came back, and we all had a big meeting, and we told him what we wanted to do, and Martinez said, no, I didn't want to do that. No. Let me have the band. I said, well, we owe some money. He said, I don't care. I said, okay, if you want to continue on as Vengeance Rising, hire some people and do whatever, that's fine with us. But you have to assume the debt under whatever it was on our T-shirt sales. You're going to have to assume that debt. That's all up to you. If you want to do it, then you owe this money. He said, fine. That sounds good to me. And so a contract was written up. Everybody signed a contract, and everybody was happy. Okay, and everybody was so happy. At the time, there was a underground magazine called Heaven's Metal, and they did a big article, and they interviewed everybody in the band, and we were all happy. But as time went by, some things, I don't know really what happened with Martinez, but obviously he was unhappy, and I don't really know all the stories because I haven't listened to the stories. That's what it was. Band broke up. Roger Martinez wanted to take it. We gave it to him, and then he took off, and whatever happened with him is what happened with him. And that's it. So it wasn't like we ripped him off. And a lot of people said, oh, you guys ripped him off. You left him with this and that. No, we didn't. He chose that. That's what he wanted to do. And then I've heard that he is denied his faith or whatever that now and people wonder, or is he saved or is he not saved and this and that. I don't know. All that's between him and God. Dan, really, when it comes down to it, it's between him and God. And I've went on, everybody's went on, but still the music of Vengeance Rising, and especially the album Human Sacrifice, is timeless. It's won so many awards, and it's like it's been voted the number one Christian metal of all time, of all genres and everything, just because of the impact that it has. And even now, more than 30 years later, you and I, Dan, are here on the radio talking about that Vengeance album from way back in the day.
And let me just say, I am someone who is an icy critic when it comes to music. And I wouldn't just say, oh, yeah, it was good. Like, if I were talking to someone from Petra, I wouldn't flatter them with saying that the music held up. But as far as Christian music, like I said, Vengeance Rising and Mortification are about as good as it gets from my point of view. And we have a Christian station locally, and there's just a sound to Christian music. It's a certain timbre. I just can't take it. I almost feel as though it's like this bad reaction. It just, you know what I'm talking about, that kind of cheesy praise music sound.
Oh, are you talking about the production?
Just the entire sound of it. It rubs me wrong in a lot of ways, which I think it affects people differently for different reasons, because a lot of us have baggage that was never ours to carry. I mean, everyone has their own experience and their own take on what it all means. And I can say that for myself, one of few good memories I have regarding youth group or any of that experience is being able to listen to the music of Vengeance Rising. It's true.
Well, I appreciate you saying that about how you love the album and everything.
Talk about your more recent music project.
Okay, my more recent music project, I wanted to go for something different than speed metal and thrash. There's a lot of death metal and a lot of stuff like that. And for me and my partner, Nick Layton, we wanted to do something melodic. We wanted to do something that had a hard edge, but still some melody to it, not thrash at all. And that's what we did. We put together some stuff. It's very melodic, but it's very cool. The name of the band is Reign of Glory. Nick's a guitar player from Vancouver, Washington, and him and I, we worked together so well, and we needed a vocalist, and we got Robin Kyle Bazzari. He was the vocalist for Die Happy, and he's got a great melodic voice, and so we used him, and we also used Jim Chaffin of a he was famous for the band Crucified, was a punk Christian band. And so we just got through recording this thing. I think it's fabulous. It's not thrash. It's not speed metal. It's not death metal or anything like that. But it's really doing very well. It's on Rocks Records. And as far as all Rocks Records artists, we're kicking butt. And our videos are way above everybody else. So I'm excited for the new band called Reign of Glory. Once again, it's not thrash, it's not speed metal, it's not death metal, it's melodic metal, and I'm pretty proud of it.
What track should we listen to from the latest?
I guess, let me give you the heaviest one. It would probably be A Thousand Years. There's a song called 1,000 Years. It's number 9 on the album, if you go 1 through 10. Kind of a galloping thing. It's called 1,000 Years. Dan, you throw that one on, and it's going to give everybody a pretty good look at this new album, Reign of Glory.
That sounds great. And if people want to visit you on the web, Roger Dale Martin, where can they go?
If you want to visit me, I used to have a website, but I don't anymore. People don't even want to go to my website, but they'll go to Facebook and Instagram all day long. Go to Facebook, look at Roger Dale Martin. If you want to holler at me, well, then what's it called, a DM, a PM? Give me a message, and I'll holler back at you. And that's the best way to get a hold of me, Facebook Roger Dale Martin.
Roger Dale Martin, the bass player of the Christian band Vengeance Rising. Vengeance Rising, a Christian band I listened to as a kid in the early 90s, and currently bass player for Reign of Glory. Thanks again, Roger, for your time.
Well, you are just as welcome as you can be, Dan. You've been a great host, and this has been fun, 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 fun. Love it.
Here's the track 1,000 Years from the album All Will Bow.
To be
When the Oregon State women's basketball team lost its Elite Eight game against number one and undefeated South Carolina last week, it might have been a disappointment, but it wasn't a surprise. What was a surprise was the announcement that came a few days later from star guard and team leader Talia von Olhoffen. She is entering the transfer portal to leave OSU and play her remaining season of eligibility elsewhere. Another surprise was the reason von Olhoffen gave. Given the circumstances, I have decided that it is best for me and my future to close this chapter of my life, to enter the portal as a graduate transfer. The circumstances she refers to were not further described, leaving us to wonder, what are they? Next year, as you've certainly heard, the Beavers and Washington State will be all that remain of the former Pac-12 conference. As a result of that chaos, the entirety of sports at both schools will change dramatically, and not necessarily for the better. The football teams will play in the Mountain West Conference, a respectable group, including such schools as Boise State, San Jose State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and the like. Respectable, but not including schools like USC, UCLA, Stanford, Cal, or Washington on the Beaver schedule, although the Beavs did manage to convince Oregon to continue their age-old series. But the basketball programs, both men's and women's, has dropped down to the West Coast Conference, which is quite a bit lower below the Mountain West. Only two of those schools landed in the NCAA tournament for both men's and women's basketball. Gonzaga had both programs, men's and women's, and the St. Mary's men's team. Compare that to the four men's teams and seven women's Pac-12 teams that made the tournament, and all of those teams won at least one game. The Lady Beavers won three. Seems like Talia von Olhoffen will end up at a school playing elite basketball, and she will not have to play the likes of Loyola Marymount, Pepperdine, or Santa Clara. More importantly, what does this say to her teammates? It's quite possible more players will leave for the higher level of play they're used to. On the men's team side, it's even worse. Seven players are leaving Oregon State, including their best, Jordan Pope, Tyler Bilodeau, and Dexter Acano. Meanwhile, the Pac-2 schools, OSU and Washington State, have the benefit of receiving money the NCAA gives out to conferences. As long as the Pac-12 exists in any form, that money will help keep the athletic departments afloat. But this reporter has to ask, what good is the money when all your best players are leaving? Keep an eye on the transfer portal. It is definitely not in Oregon State's favor for both men's or women's basketball or any sport the Beavers participate in. For KORC, I'm Lava Lamp Larry.